15 to 20 million.
Oh, I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are National Leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM in Philadelphia and the entire tri-state area. As always, I ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in on 860. If they live outside the Philadelphia tri-state area, you can listen from anywhere in the world by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Well, first, before we get started, I want to invite all of you to let family and friends that are in small businesses or they would like to become involved with small business, open a small business, to the Small Business Expo that is going to be taking place on Thursday, May the 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center. That's at 11th and Arch Streets in Center City, Philadelphia. From 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., there is a link on the front page of American Workers Radio with a lot more information. Admission to Small Business Expo is totally free. And of course, if you'd like to do special things, they have some availabilities, but the expo itself is admission free. And I encourage you to spread the word. Well, joining me today in studio, I have Walt Jakubowski, who you know as a well-respected educator and a major supporter of the American-made movement and a promoter of job skills. I'm going to ask Walt to introduce our special guest today to our panel members on board Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and Mark Andel, who's the founder of Made in America Store and the star of American Made Movie. But first, I want to turn it over to Walt Jakubowski. Walt, sign in.
Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. We are in March, but this is the first time the groundhog was really right. We had six more weeks, and we're getting another hit again tomorrow.
Tomorrow we're going to be in Snowville. Like, Mark, how's everything up there in Snowland?
It started with 2 inches of snow, then we got sleet and rain, but now it's getting cold again. So we're still snow buried. And it's been, we broke every record there is, I think, Mike.
And welcome, Rich Logis. Say a few words, and then I'm going to ask Walt to introduce our special guest.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Good morning, everyone. Guys, welcome back to the show. Walt, welcome back.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce Ramon Ritchie. Ramon is the president of the Latino Contractors Association. They are a 20-year-old organization that promotes a lot of contract assistance, et cetera, for small businesses, for contractors, people who are in the trades. And I invited Ramon here because he's very close to the concept of needing skilled workers so that their businesses can grow. And I think the audience should hear it directly from someone who is very involved in the construction industry. And I'm going to have Ramon tell you a little bit about the Latino Contractors Association and what their mission is. Ramon?
Good morning. My name is Ramon Ritchie, president of the Latino Contractor. And the Latino Contractor was founded in 1996 because we saw the need of the contractors to work in the city contracts. And I'm tired of seeing in our community, you know, people coming from other state doing work in our community, and the really person who live in the community cannot work for them. The Latino Contractor Association represent the need of the and the interests of the Latino community. We provide education, employment, and training opportunity for neighborhood residents and John toward rebuilding the community utilizing the expertise of the membership. Latino Contractor has been working with partner with other entity where we help not only the Latino. We've been training in the construction field, Afro-American, Latinos, Brazilians, and we open to all the other nationality, because this is very important that we can create more jobs. That's the need that all community have been suffering. And I think if we get together, we can get it done.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, this is Walt. Again, Michael sent me a copy of the American-made movie, and I watched it twice, and my head was spinning with things that we all can do for solutions to some of those problems. But after I finished it, one of the things that I really concluded is we need more Marks. We need more people like you to be able to have a concept, to be able to have an idea, and to be able to want to take the risk. And it hit me that this is where the small businesses, tradespeople, and mid-sized businesses like yourself is really the backbone of where the jobs are and where America is. And in the movie, it struck me that when Scott Paul said that these larger companies, they have one interest. They have an interest basically to their board and to their stockholders, whatever the product is, et cetera, that has a minimal amount of interest. So the movie was excellent, and it just has to get circulated.
Yeah, thanks, Walt. That movie, once you see it, and I appreciate and thank you for watching it, because it really is an eye-opener. It was, put together really well. It's really non-political. It just shows our point to raise awareness. We have to, remind people that, like you said, it myself or a Latino or, yourself, we all play a part in this. And it's what kind of made the fabric of the country. I always said, I had a great concept idea with the Made in America store, but a better concept idea was America. It was an idea, to get this country going and kind of design it like they did and we are running today. But, while that movie could be watched, they turned it into a 60-minute movie. That's an hour and a half and a little more talking heads. They shrank it a little bit for the school curriculum to 60 minutes and for foreign film. But it does show a lot, and it's inspirational, I thought. Did you think the movie was inspirational? You can make a difference. It wasn't all negative.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Definitely inspirational. I think the way it started out, though, with
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit. And, one of the things that I said when I saw this is that part of the problem was is after World War II, we did not invest in new technology. And we got fat, we got lazy. And what we did is we rebuilt Japan and we rebuilt Germany, and they had the latest technology. And we were still making steel with a Bessemer converter. And consequently, now what you have is a lot of empty buildings and a lot of blight. And this is kind of what Ramon is trying to do, is that if people can't work and they can't have family-sustaining wages, good jobs in the trades, the communities go to hell. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. And that's what happened with Detroit. And this is one of the things that we're hopefully trying to prevent here in Philadelphia.
Last week, Rich said something on the program which I thought was very interesting. He said, when the boys and girls in Georgia see the movie, they're going to say, well, I have interest in that. Why don't I have access to some of those programs right in school? Do you remember that, Rich?
Yeah, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, guys. And Ramon, welcome onto the show.
Thank you.
We'll be on our best behavior for the first half hour. In the second half hour, I make no guarantees. I think, Michael, that's going to be pretty apparent. I think very quickly after this this film is integrated and makes its way into the curriculum. Because one thing about youth is that I think they really show at early ages what their interests are, what their skills are in. And when you have an entire district, entire communities, where they're going to be exposed or maybe reintroduced to Made in America and how it's pretty much interwoven into all aspects of our local life, our home life, our professional life, and nationally, students and young people are going to get interested in it. And they're going to get interested in it, and they're going to talk to their parents, to their guidance counselors, to their teachers. It is really, to use the cliche, it's truly a step. It's potentially mark a giant leap in the right direction to at least get students and not just students, but the adults who are in these districts, who, if you ask the average school district now how much talk guidance counselors and teachers have with students about the trades and about skills, many districts probably would say, if they're honest, that there's not a heck of a lot of talk in it. So this is meant to not only introduce, but to steer students and offer an option. Because it's all about the choices, guys. You know, when young people have choices to do things, they're going to show you what it is that they want to do. So it is really a big, big leap in the right direction.
The other thing is that, and I could tell you from experience, the guidance counselors have zero interest in telling people about manufacturing and what can be done in the trades. And the reason is they're pushed by that school board to send people to college, and that's how they are judged. So sending people to the trades or into a manufacturing career is not in the interest of that district, of that school district, and that's unfortunate.
So, Walt, you think that's by design, though? Like I always talk about, parents got to change and guidance counselors have to change. They have to make it okay to work with your hands, let it be a plumber or a welder or a machinist. And we see the disconnect, but you think, they're driven. The guidance counselors, it's not even on their plate to even talk about that.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And, you know, there's another, like I say, they're judged by this. Those school districts are judged, and if you listen to any radio ads about a school district or a teachers association, it's, we have 93% or 98% of our students go on to college. And that's basically the barometer as to how they're judged. The secret is, and this is an unknown secret that are kept by colleges and universities, those who start as a freshman, they graduate less than 40% of the people who start out as a freshman in college.
Unbelievable. You know, I want to tell you, give you a little heads up on something. I did send the American-made movie to Harrisburg. Yesterday, Governor Tom Wolf gave his, the new governor of Pennsylvania, gave his budget address, and I want to compliment him for bringing up the fact that the first time we ever heard that we have to restore the trades in our schools. He is starting off with the community colleges, and that's going to be something that we're going to be working on to make sure that it reaches down the line. Getting to the community colleges, the fact that it was mentioned, that it's focused upon, is already unbelievable. Never heard anything like it before. So I want to compliment all the people working with the governor and the governor himself. He really did a beautiful job. My compliments to our lieutenant governor, our friend Michael Stack, who's been a supporter of ours for many years. You know, I've been doing this since 1998, and I saw the need to promote jobs, and many people just didn't want to be bothered, and especially school counselors. They thought that it has to be college bound and you're going to be sitting behind the desk for life and all, never taking into consideration, Walt and everyone listening, the fact that we have boys and girls who are great with their hands and who have the ability to invent and be innovative in every way possible. And yet we were not nurturing them during their high school and early college years. So the fact that they're going to push that now in the community colleges is the first step, and then work down into the high mm-hmm. schools and the junior high schools. We don't have many of them. We do have them in the area. But in Philadelphia, just take a look at Philadelphia. At one time, you would have 40% of the schools had the trades. Today, it's nowhere near that. So it has to be restored. And of course, population went up. School age boys and girls went up in the district. We have to spell out to them exactly what's available to them and what the industries need today. It's an excuse for industry. If you don't have skilled workers, people that have some basic hands-on experience, we're not going to be able to continue the businesses here.
Now, Mike and guys, you know, I own General Welding and Fabricating. So we run about, out of the 70 employees, 35 are welders. I run three shifts a week. I've got two plants, so we close on Sundays. Last night I had to stay a little longer, talk to my weld manager. It was about 7 o'clock, and you know, he's frustrated again. He can't find welders because when I listen to what's going on, he just can't find them. So last week I reached out to Alfred Technology, good college. They've got a two-year degree. Well, you'd like a two-year degree. They started in welding probably about 5 years ago. And I wanted to get hold of the teacher, so I did. And the teacher was decent, invited me down. But I'm telling him the shortage. He said, well, you're not the only one looking for welders, and I knew that. I'm also sending him a movie, but you know, we've got such a shortage, and we understand it on this radio show. Maybe the listeners grab it. But how do we – it's like the movie. If you get somebody to watch the movie, when we did the 32-city tour, it changed everybody after that movie. I didn't care who you were, but it's getting them to watch it. But somehow we got to get them to know this is a serious problem. But I don't see a lot of change because I'm still looking for welders today, just like last year, and we're training and whatnot. But it's such a critical problem. It's going to, you can't grow our economy, you can't grow a business without having these skilled workers.
You know, Ramon, has the school district helped you in any way in trying to get people for all of your member contractors?
No. The school district, you know, with the situation that we're going through right now, they don't even help themselves because look, all the kids, the situation that we have with our schools. The mentality, they always come with they don't have no money. They can have, you know, situation. They have to fix the problem that they have internally in order for us to have better education in our schools.
Very true. Very well said. Well
Ramon,
said.
You can, you know, and I will defer to you guys when it comes to Philly politics and schools. My familiarity with it, excuse me, is from all the guys on the show. But as Larkin and myself and all of us have pointed out in the past, you give any organization that is mismanaged, improperly run, you can give them unlimited amounts of money. It will not help. It is not a money issue. It's, as you point out very astutely, Ramon, When your house is a mess,
there you go,
and it's not in order, you can't have anybody over. You can't have company because they'll be tripping over all your crap. So the fact of the matter is, if you've got an organization, especially one that is funded by public monies, because that's what public education is. It's not. There is no free education. There is no such thing as free. It has to come funding from somewhere.
Yes.
And I can cite for you districts down here in Florida that have experienced the same thing. So the first thing about getting a house in order is really, first off, being honest with everyone, politics and beliefs aside, and saying, why the hell is it that our house isn't in order? When you start getting it in order, then we can start talking about how to allocate monies and expenditures. Until that point happens, though, the house will always be a mess. You could dump unlimited funds into it. Won't make a difference.
What we got with the public school is they creating more problem in our society, because what happened is young student be skipping or kicking off schools. They've been doing, you know, they going to corners doing the bad things or whatever they do. They don't have no education, and the school don't do nothing about that. And what we're gonna have is problem for our community, because when the school have a better program, what they gonna work with those student that having problem, sometimes they come, that problem come from the father down to the member of the house. Some of them is economic. They don't have a good living in the house. The house is in bad condition. They don't have no heater or air condition. But what we can do about it? We can do so much. The school district had to be reformed and do, you know, better with the little one that they pick to keep working on it.
You know, Ramon, you bring up a good subject. This is also an opportunity for us to say that parents, community leaders have to speak up. You know, when jobs were plentiful in America back in the 80s and 90s, it wasn't noticeable that we didn't have that many jobs. But once the prolonged recession hit and people started to look at all the empty manufacturing buildings, all the offices, the local stores were empty, people saw that it's a crisis. And once you reach that crisis point, it's very hard to turn the ship around, as Scott Paul said, in midstream. It's a little bit of a job to do that. We're trying to do that. Unfortunately, Ramon and everybody listening, we don't have people in the hierarchy that are willing to help us. Way back in 1998, I remember when I started talking about this issue of things are happening in America, our jobs are leaving and this and that. Most people said to me, don't bring that up. You sound like America's going down the drain. So I backed off somewhat, but I always kept the movement going. And now people say, I would never believe it came to this. But when you go to the school board meeting, when you go to places where you're going to see governors and state representatives and state senators, it's really time for us to be very vocal about what we want. We want the trades back, period. Why? If we don't get them back now, there's not going to be anybody left to teach the trades. And somebody said to me a few weeks ago, Mark, you may remember I said on the broadcast, if we don't have people in America, we'll import some teachers from Germany or anywhere else, bring them in to restore our trades. We did that after World War II. We sent our teachers abroad to revitalize their industries. Now it's time for us to bring them back if necessary.
And Mark, what Ramon is doing, because of the same situation with you, he's responsible for anywhere, depending on time, anywhere from 30 to 50 small businesses and contractors can't find the labor for those businesses to grow, the skilled labor for those businesses to grow. And he's left with no choice. He's got to start his own program for his business membership because of the failure of the school system.
The most unbelievable part of all this is that for all these years, national leaders, the people elected and paid to do a job, have really been looking the other way. They've been giving window dressing. Oh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that during election time. But after the election, there was nothing on the table for anybody to grasp and say, well, this is what we want. There was just simply nothing there. Joining us also today is a member of our panel, Larkin Connolly. Larkin, how are you doing?
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Michael, good morning. Henry, Rich and Mark, and our house guest. Michael, I hope you're not letting anybody sit on my seat.
Oh, no.
That's a joke. That's a joke. I'm very cold where I am, wearing a sweater and long underwear and still a little bit nippy, and I am, folks, in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh,
I heard they had all that snow down there. Oh, yeah.
It's 41 degrees, so it's, you know, there's almost no place to run in this country. But I came in late, but I wanted to add something from a score perspective. If you've got 20 companies in the city of Philadelphia that can't find skilled labor, they don't have but probably one or two options to that approach. The first option is to is to go out into the marketplace and overpay people who are working for somebody else and kind of screw up their labor market and their labor margins. Get the same people that are working for them to work almost egregious overtime to meet the demand. But the second one is, and it's one that is a little bit longer term, and it's what we call a sustainable approach to the problem, and that is internally create your own program where you have interns that you train and bring them up to the level of the skill sets that you're looking for. There's probably hardly anybody in the country that can talk about that very fact better than Mark Andel. But those are the two approaches that we take at SCORE.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Larkin, how you doing? We've done that, and I agree with you. That's just a way you have to do, you know, and we kind of say like the German model, I guess, or European model, to, you know, get these people in, work more interns with them. That's what I'm trying to do with the school, Elford Technology, get these kids, even when they're on breaks when they got their first year in, work for me in between, and then get your second year, and then hopefully, you know, come and place a job. But it's the way you learn about the company you're working for, too. So a lot of times I'm looking for guys that at least learn the basics, know how to hold a welding torch, and know all the basics, so I can then take them and train them to fit my needs. And that's what we don't have. We don't have that gentleman or lady, you know, or gentleman that has the basic skills. And that's what we're lacking, because it takes a lot more time to bring them up to speed.
Ramon, you want to talk about how you're going to run your program, especially like that apprentice type model?
Yeah, well, we're trying to put together, well, we're working on it. We're trying to train, first of all, in the city of Philadelphia, you got a lot of license and special one. You if you got a business, you labor, or you labor had to be certified by OSHA, have all the training. It's difficult for the people to get jobs, and well, my priority is to train those people who looking for job to gonna support the house, you're gonna support their family, and that way they don't have no excuse when they go and apply for a job, or those contractors that what they trying to get contract with the city. They deny because they need to have certification of EPA certification or whatever. That's what we doing right now. We training on those certifications. When they go, I'm gonna apply for a job, they cannot give them excuse in order for them to work on those program. And what we doing, we training individual for our community to supply the need of those contractors, and they be ready for work on and listen, if we do this, the community is the one who's gonna progress. I know that our leaders, they're gonna turn around, they don't gonna help us. We gotta do it on our own, and we gotta try to do whatever we can to make it work.
And Ramon, you have to understand the motivation of the leaders. It's egregious. It's stomach turning. Mm-hmm. It's everything that's wrong with the governmental system that we have right now, because the government's being led by the unions. Those restrictions being put on your employees,
yes,
are restrictions that are being put in place so that unions can protect their members, and outside people can't come in and do jobs that otherwise their union people would do. It's really bad. It's bad. It's very, very, very restrictive. And for us to close this job skills gap, the unions are going to have to relent. The city's going to have to relent a little bit, and our big time leaders, our larger leaders, are going to have to say, listen, this idea that I've been preaching for the last 4 years that you should go get a college education is bogus, mm-hmm, and I'm backing off. You need to go get an education and an apprenticeship that allows you to prepare yourself to be a skilled worker for the remainder of your life.
That's true.
Well said. Wow. Larkin, excellent. But, you know, the thing that amazes me, And when we come back, if everybody can sit quiet for a few minutes, when we come back, I'm going to ask everybody to give me their idea. How did we get into this? How did we drop all of our trade programs? And what do you think would be the best way to restore them? How are we going to get after these people? I mean, start demanding a share of the money for trades programs, for the vocational arts. When I come back, we will discuss all of those issues. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back in a minute. The Small Business Expo in Philadelphia takes place on Thursday, March the 19th from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, 11th and Arch Streets in Philadelphia. At the Small Business Expo, you can network with thousands of business owners and attend workshops. Register to attend for free at thesmallbusinessexpo.com. This event is for business owners, entrepreneurs, startups, anyone that works for a small business or interested in starting a small business. Over 100 exhibitors will be there to share ideas. Spread the word about the Small Business Expo, Thursday, March the 19th, 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Pennsylvania Convention Center, 11th and Arch Streets in Philadelphia. Register to attend for free at thesmallbusinessexpo.com. And I want to alert you that there is a link right on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It's the Small Business Expo link. It'll tell you more. Major employers, major business people, major people who are going to speak to the community will be there to discuss small businesses. Please don't miss this event. You can register free. There are other options that you can pay to go into some special programming that's going to be there, special speakers. But the main event is totally free of charge. Click on the Small Business Expo link right on the right side of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. And we are a sponsor of this event, so I will see you there. And also, I would like to thank the many people in the community in the Philadelphia tri-state area that continue to help us to maintain our broadcast. And I just would like to briefly acknowledge them today. They receive their full acknowledgments and their advertising 6 days a week here on 860. And on the seventh day, which is American Workers Radio Day, I give them an abbreviated advertisement. Thanks to our supporters from Polka Deli, from the Polish American Travel Service, from Giorgio Foods, from the Washington Savings Bank, from Yolanda Konopatska DeCipio, attorney at law, from Karen Janad at State Farm Insurance, from Dr. Włodzimierz Zinn and everyone from Everest Dental, from Mr. Frank Spula and everyone from the Polish National Alliance, as well as Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, Mr. Chester Kshanowski, who is the proprietor of Serena's Auto Body Shop, the Net Cost Market, located at 117,001 Bustleton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, and from Mr. Joseph Drobot, who is the national president of the PRCUA, the Polish Roman Catholic Union of America. Also, thanks for supporting American workers, from Michael Steinman, attorney at law, from Dr. Eva Machak, who has two dental offices in Philadelphia, and from Dominic Rostocki, attorney at law located in Philadelphia. Also, don't forget that the Royal Krakowia restaurant is located at 510 White Horse Pike South in Magnolia, New Jersey. Check them out on the internet by going to royalkrakowia.com. And I encourage you also to look at the front page of American Workers Radio. On there, you will find several very important links that I encourage you to check out. Also, there is a link to contact your elected officials. No matter where you live in the USA, that link will tell you exactly who is your representatives. It is all updated. Just click on it, put in your zip code, and it'll take you right to the people that are helping you. There's also a link there about Justin Friend, who is a young welder, who is a very special person, who's done some great things, and I'd like you to read his story. There's also how a factory man fought to save his furniture business. Click on that and read that as well. And Scott Paul, our guest a few weeks ago, has his link up there, the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and I encourage you always to support Mark Andel by clicking on Made in America store, or go right to his picture and click on it, and you'll be able to support the products that he is offering through his internet site. But I plead with you, please do spread the word about the Small Business Expo, and that's on Thursday, March the 19th, at the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania Convention Center. That's at 11th and Arch Streets in Philadelphia. Okay, Walt, I am, as an educator, I'm going to ask you to begin the next portion of today's broadcast. And if you were in charge of the Department of Education, what would you say should be done to get these trade programs back in the school?
First of all, I would abolish that department.
Very good. Well, they've been saying that for about 10 years now.
Yeah. The very first thing is, at least the way I see it, is that we have to start working with our young people, very young, when they first start school. And like, I'll give you an example. When I was in school, they did have the industrial arts, the trades, and that type of thing. But the other piece of that is I was a member of, at one point, of Junior Achievement, which is a program that allowed us to do certain things, make certain things, put it together, learn about selling and things of that nature. I was also went through all through the Scouts, where you made things, you did things, et cetera. And I had more knowledge of product and the math that I was being taught in school, really from real life experience with the Boy Scouts. One of the projects that we had, for example, was at one of the Legion posts, we were going to erect a new flagpole. And I learned about, you know, the sway that was going to be necessary, how tall this was going to be, how many cubic yards of concrete are going to be necessary. All of the things that they talked about in the abstract in school, we learned outside. So we were able to do that. I think today, many of the parents are not involved with those types of activities with their children, and they're more interested in sports. There's baseball season, there's soccer season, they overlap, there's football season, there's basketball season, and if they can't do it outside, there's indoor season for whatever the case it is. And some of the things that, like I said, that a lot of the folks that when I was younger did to bring some of that abstract learning to life is just not there anymore. And I don't think we need a board of education to start putting out curricula that doesn't involve people that that should have hands-on experience and skills.
Very well said. You know, I would like to know who on a national level, maybe Larkin has heard something, who on a national level has been pointing these kinds of views out, the views that we discuss on this radio broadcast. I'd like to know if there is a senator, a House of Representative member who said, guys, we have wasted all these years not putting our people into the trades. What are we going to do to take this and turn it around? Have you known anybody like that, Larkin?
Well, there are a handful of guys, and I wish I could tell you, guys and gals, I wish I could tell you on a national level that agree very, very much with the previous opinion that the Department of Education needs to be disbanded. And every one of those people that are making these egregious salaries in Washington, D.C., with outlandish benefits, need to go back to their home states and where the control of education needs to be. And that's, you know, in the Harrisburgs and the Albanys and the Newarks of the country. It's just absolutely ridiculous for 15,000 people in a building in Washington, D.C., to think that they know how education should be handled in West Virginia and the Appalachians, as well as, you know, four of the five boroughs in New York City. They have absolutely no idea. The closer you get to the student and the governing of his education and the setting of the policies and procedures for his learning process, the closer you get to that student, the more successful you're going to be educating that individual. And there are a handful of politicians in Washington that, in fact, are espousing to this. If you follow some of the guys that are running on the Republican side, closing the Department of Education is only the first of about four departments that they would completely and totally close down and abandon.
Now, Ramon is here, and he is telling us a horror story that the schools are not graduating or just letting people go, you know, quit school and have no talents or no possibility. In other words, what I'm trying to say is if a person said, well, I'm not going to be good at academics, but can you put me in a trade program? You at least have a decision. I'll go here or I'll go there. Right now, you walk out the door and they don't, you know, they just don't have anything to offer you.
Here's the problem, Michael. And it's a social problem, and it's the hardest one of all to resolve, ever. And that is the complete and unmitigated collapse of the family, in Philadelphia for sure, but in America. These children, nobody is more profound to a young child's education than his parents. I mean, they're the ones that emphasize the education. They're the ones that emphasize the completion of the education. They're the ones that tutor. They process. They make sure that the student is paying attention, that he's going to school. Teachers can't, you know, provide that muscle. Many of them try, but they can't.
Now, Larkin,
so
what you're...
We're going to struggle with this as long as these kids are coming home to a house with no parents in it.
Now, Larkin, do you think that in the last 25 or 30 years, as many of these programs were dropped, the parents of today's children lacked what these children need today? And so they never had access to anything to really build themselves up, like, I'm going to be a plumber, I'm going to be a welder, I'm going to be an electrician, I know about HVAC. You know, they don't have anything like that. So how can they now project something positive onto their young, to their children?
If you watch the Horizon commercial, I love it. I think there's a statement to be made, and I think I'm probably the only sap that picks up on it from commercial to commercial. But it's the father-son deal. It's the son asking the dad about, you know, Horizon services. And they're getting a free plug, so send them a bill for $500 for this. But, you know, it's the son talking to the father, and he's going to follow in his father's footsteps, and he's going to be a crackerjack plumber just like his dad is. It's a great commercial. It says an awful lot that needs to be said to the families of America today, but unfortunately, when the commercials come on, they turn them off and turn on their MP3s and all of whatever else.
Yes, I've seen that commercial, Larkin, and you're absolutely right. Mark, you're the youngest of the people who are in this particular type of industry. Can you tell me what was different 20 years ago and what is different right now in the school system where you are up there in the Buffalo area?
Yeah, our schools, when I went, you know, I graduated in 84, we had in high school, not even our BOCES, which was separate, in high school we had metal shop, wood shop, power mechanics, electronics, electricity, which was outstanding. You could sign up for them, and that was in high school, and it taught you a lot. It exposed you to that. I always said even if you were a doctor, you should be able to fix your doorknob or your simple things, learn how to hold a hammer and what a screwdriver is. So we had all that available in school, and then if you wanted to go even further into the trades, you could apply for the 2 years in your high school for a BOCES program. And Larkin, you know the BOCES program is a good program up here in New York that allows you to go for auto mechanics or diesel or welding or plumbing or machinist. Now, that still exists, but today in school, again, my daughter's 12 years old, and she's 7th grade, and Walt, you'd appreciate this. You know, she just went to a public school from a Catholic school, but she has to do technology. There's a tech class, but it's the only tech class, and she's only going to work with wood. But after her first day, she came home her second day, and she said, "Dad, I got 100 on this little this sheet of paper." I said, "What'd they ask you?" Basically, what a hammer was, what a screwdriver was, what a saw, and she knew that. So she was proud and happy for that. But it's nice, but that's the only course that's going to be, you know, Mike, compared to 25 years or 30 years ago, I had 6 to 8 courses available in school I could take without even going out, you know, with a different bus. She only has one class called tech, and that's going to teach her the basics and a little bit of wood, no metal at all. So there's a huge change compared to what the kids can be exposed to. And generally a student would like, when I bring them through my shop and they see the CAD or they see hydraulics or truck equipment or dump bodies or welding, and all the work we get into, they love it. They said, "What's that?" They get exposed, they get excited, but they don't spark that interest no more because it's not in the school, and then they get out of school and they're on their way to whatever, if it's college or who knows where they end up now.
Very well said. And Rich, I'm going to ask you this. As a writer, a former newspaper writer, how would you like to see this addressed to, go after the elected people, the education boards? How would you like to see, or what would you recommend be done?
Well, I'd like to first, Michael, encourage people, voters, Americans, to actually give a blankety blank, first off. That's usually the impetus for any kind of substantial change. And the reason for that is because there is, whether school boards and politicians want to acknowledge this or not, there really is a very thick, palpable elitism about the way that politicians and educators view the way they legislate and allocate money. They know better. We know better. This is the curriculum. You don't understand as a voter what exactly is going on. We know best, so we're going to legislate.
Okay,
people
Rich.
People need to resist that.
How do you start that resistance?
Well, first and foremost, when Larkin is talking about a family, the breakdown of the family, then I think, Larkin, I would add that education is in large part an economic issue. And the way, Michael, that people can get this snowball rolling on the mountain, so to speak, is to force the hands by legislation, by voting, by meetings, by speaking up, by rolling their sleeves up, by getting down and dirty and getting honest with the people who are employed by their tax monies, who are school administrators and politicians. There is no reason, Michael, at all, in this present day and age in the United States, that people cannot utilize the various tools and technologies that we have to, first off, educate themselves about what it is that's going on in our country, both nationally and locally. And from that point on, Michael, then what happens is you create the groundswell to then actually create many movements throughout American communities to say, hey, we need to start talking about trades and skills as being sexy again, because it's not been sexy enough. The curriculum in schools that have to do with gay and lesbian stuff and evolution versus creationism and all that other crap has been what's been sexy because it gets the headlines. Well, it's not. But I'm going to use a logical point that Larkin has brought up before about minimum wage. Larkin has said before, the minimum wage discussion is a little bit of a moot point without jobs. And I'm going to say that same principle, guys, applies to the trades. Because if there aren't any manufacturing jobs coming back, or they're few and far between, what is the incentive to teach trades? What is the incentive to teach skilled work when there's no damn jobs for them to go to?
Well, I could say part of the problem is a big part of the problem definitely is coming out of government. I could remember being an educator is the National Science Foundation would give a grant monies to universities for particular research, and that would go to a particular professor, and that professor would own the intellectual property. So what would happen is that obviously they wants to sell whatever that design is. And in many cases, the this is why I said early on, we need more marks. In many cases, the American, small American manufacturer, et cetera, did not want to do that, nor did they want to pay for that. So consequently, the professor sold that intellectual property overseas, whether it was Japan, South Korea, China, et cetera. What happened in the late, under the Clinton administration, is President Clinton appointed a person, Dr. Joseph Berdonia from the University of Pennsylvania, to head the National Science Foundation. And what he did is he made some a real revolutionary change that said if a university or a professor at a university is to apply for a particular research grant, they must partner up with a community college or an entity that will begin to train the workforce so that the products can be made here in the United States. One of the first initiatives that actually worked was in nanotechnology. And that worked out relatively well. There were several universities involved in that here in Philadelphia. It was Drexel, Penn, and Penn State University. And all of the community colleges in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania participated by training individuals in nanotechnology manufacturing. Unfortunately, Joe is no longer with the National Science Foundation. He is back at Penn, and that initiative just kind of died, unfortunately.
You see, that's exactly what we can't allow in the future. And go ahead, Rich, because there's too many of these fat cats sitting around looking out for themselves. No one should have access to the intellectual properties. When we do something, we do it across the board for every man, woman, and child that would like to access that property for all time.
Guys,
yes.
Did you see the email I sent about the DOD, Department of Defense, and the American flags?
Yes.
They're going to follow the Berry Act, and the Berry Act, Walt was kind of, it was made to basically state that anything purchased by the DOD was to be articles, materials, and supplies 100% grown or produced in the United States.
Yep.
Which was a great, this is something we need, this is something we're kind of talking about, but this flag, which you would think would be common sense, would have been at all the defense, departments of defense now, which hopefully the rule becomes law by the end of this month. But that's something that it's progress in the right direction. But again, it needs to happen more. I think all businesses should have a percentage required here and stay competitive. Because, Rich, like you said, if there isn't manufacturing, that's what I support, 450 American privately owned manufacturers with the Made in America story. If there isn't manufacturing here, we're not going to have the incentive for the kids. And Larkin, I like how you drew a line in the sand today. You said you're telling people to go into the trades, right? You put your foot down now. You're not embarrassed. You're not ashamed to say go into the trades. And I think that's what we all got to do. Not saying college is bad, but it's okay to go into trades. And I think, Larkin, you're right there, right?
So, Mark, yes, common sense. It is. It's common sense. Sorry, Larkin. Didn't mean to.
And, it's absolutely the truth, that this embarrassment or this stigma that I'm a plumber or I'm a carpenter. I look at my brother with inordinate pride because he is both. And he's been very successful in life. He's extremely intelligent. Here's what I can't do. I can't sit down with my children, although I've already been through this. But I couldn't sit down with my children right now and say, okay, so the University of Pennsylvania is a great school. They pay their president over $2 million a year. All of the executive and VP in the operations side make over six-figure incomes. They have over 150 tenured professors that make over seven figures. So I think you should go to the University of Pennsylvania, pay $80,000 for an irrelevant education, and when you graduate, don't worry about it. You'll only have about $800,000 worth of debt that you have to pay in a marketplace that can't find a job for you to even pay your mortgage, let alone a nice, you know, a real sweet student loan. What's wrong with that model? Somebody explain to me how any college professor, I don't care how big the damn place is, University of Pennsylvania included, makes $2 million. She makes actually over $2 million, like $2.3 million a year is her compensation. Are you kidding me?
What's interesting is both the University of Pennsylvania and Princeton, their endowments are so large that they do not need to charge tuition. Yet the tuition is one of the highest in the land.
Walt, you guys mentioned Princeton and University of Pennsylvania, and I just want to mention I didn't go to either one of those places.
I did. I went to.
I didn't go to either one.
I went to the University of Pennsylvania. I not only went to the University of Pennsylvania, I went to Wharton.
Well, even and, better. You guys know Stanford Business School?
No, I went by Stanford. I never stopped.
I never went there. You know MIT, right, Walt? Yeah, I didn't go there either. I want to make just one point, guys, and again, thank our guests for coming on. Guys, Michael, you know, Larkin, you put your foot down. We put our feet down. If we as a nation collectively are going to lack courage, if we're going to lack courage to speak up about things when need be, if we're going to lack courage to take action, you know something, guys, we get what we deserve. I mean, this isn't astrophysics here. I mean, this is very bread and butter, meat and potatoes, mini movements within communities and nationally. If we're going to lack that courage collectively, then for all intents and purposes, we're done. We're not done in the Roman Empire sense, but it's not getting any easier, and the world is not getting any less competitive. And universities, Walt, you mentioned universities. It's not; they're not exempt from any issue. And I just want to mention one thing, guys, a little bit unrelated, but I think it's worth. You mentioned sports before, Walt. And Larkin, you've talked before on the show about how many employees of certain states are sports coaches. You guys may have saw yesterday that Michael Jordan, the former basketball player, is now a billionaire. And I did the math. I did the math to figure out that Michael Jordan earns a day, 7 days a week, every day, $246,000 a day from clothing. Think about that.
Yeah, and where's that clothing made?
Sweatshops in China. So think about the fact that's $10,000 an hour, 24 days a week. At $275 an hour, I'm grossly underpaid.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to say we had a wonderful conversation today, and we're going to have to continue this. One thing I'd like to say is if we can discuss these kinds of things, and we're volunteers, why aren't the people in Washington who we're paying discussing this and ending the crisis that we have in America, especially getting back the institutions up to speed to do the trades and the industrial arts, where our boys and girls will have a future for life. Larkin, thank you for coming on. Rich, thank you. See you soon. Mark, I will speak with you a little bit later today. And Ramon, thank you for coming on, and thank you for telling. We're going to have you back again. Yeah. And Walt Jakubowski, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you to all the listeners. I appreciate y'all tuning in.
You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show in about an hour on the Internet. Henry will have it up. My thanks to Henry Chaplinsky, our broadcast engineer. And thanks to all of you. Don't forget to check out the front page of our internet site. Go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and make sure you spread the word about the Small Business Expo taking place on Thursday, March the 19th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Philadelphia.
Thanks, guys. See you in Philly next week.